Today I've been given this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, Text 61. So before that, a small short prayer and then we will dive into the verse for today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam Naranchaiva Narotam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayo Mudiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavate Uttama Sloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuranmetam Yena Tasmi Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurav Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Radha Damodar Bhagwan ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, apne apne Gurudev ki jai, Vartaman ISKCON Gurudev ki jai. Thank you very much. So, we are reading today from Canto 4, Chapter 25, Text number 61. I'll read the verse and translation and purport. Kvachit pibantyam pibati madira madhavi vala Asnantyam kvachit ashnati jakshatyam sahajakshiti kvachit gayati gayantyam rudatyam rudati kvachit dashantyam hasati jalpantyam anujalpati kvachit dhavati dhavantyam tishthantyam anutishthati anusete sayanayam Anvaste kvachidashitam kvachichinoti shinavantyam pashyantyam anupashyati kvachijighrati jighrantyam spishyantyam spishati kvachit kvachichasochatim jayam anusochati dinava anuhrishyati hishyantyam muditam anumodate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When the queen drank liquor, King Puranjan also engaged in drinking. When the queen dined, he used to dine with her. And when she chewed, King Puranjana used to chew along with her. When the queen sang, he also sang. Similarly, when the queen cried, he also cried. And when the queen laughed, he also laughed. When the queen talked loosely, he also talked loosely. And when the queen walked, the king walked behind her. When the queen would stand still, the king would also stand still. And when the queen would lie down in bed, he would also follow and lie down with her. When the queen sat, he would also sit. And when the queen heard something, he would follow her to hear the same thing. When the queen saw something, the king would also look at it. And when the queen smelled something, the king would follow her to smell the same thing. When the queen touched something, the king would also touch it. And when the dear queen was lamenting, the poor king also had to follow her in lamentation. In the same way, when the queen felt enjoyment, he also enjoyed. And when the queen was satisfied, the king also felt satisfaction. Purport. The mind is the place where the self is situated and the mind is conducted by the intelligence. The living entity situated within the heart follows the intelligence. The intelligence is herein depicted as the queen and the soul under mental control follows the material intelligence just as the king follows his wife. The conclusion is that material intelligence is the cause of bondage for the living entity. The point is that one has to take to spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. In the life of Maharaj Ambarish, we find that the great Maharaj first engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. In this way, his intelligence became purified. Maharaj Ambarish also used his other senses in the service of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity in the temple nicely decorated with flowers. he engaged his sense of smell by smelling the flowers, and he engaged his legs by walking to the temple. His hands were engaged in cleansing the temple, and his ears were engaged in hearing about Krishna. His tongue was engaged in two ways, in speaking about Krishna and in tasting prasad offered to the deity. Materialistic persons who are under the full control of material intelligence cannot perform all these activities. Thus, consciously or unconsciously, they become entangled by the dictations of material intelligence. This fact is summarized in the following verse. So very, 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 very beautiful verse. So I know that all of you have been talking about this maybe for a couple of days now. So we know how King Prachanibar, his sons Prachetas were guided by Lord Shiva. But though his sons were doing devotional service, or they were engaged in worshipping the Lord or doing tapasya, but he was engaged in fruitive activities. So Narad Muni very kindly, having mercy on him, goes and talks to him. And with the allegory of this story of King Puranjana, he explains to him different things and the futility of fruitive activities. So we know in the previous verses how he explains about the king and the queen and the nine gates and the city of nine gates. So here, we come here to our sloka today, where Narad Muni is explaining that how the King Puranjana had become so attached to the queen that whatever the queen was doing, he was simply following. So whether if she was sleeping, he was sleeping. If he was eating, he was eating, laughing. So he goes on explaining to that. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that here the queen is the material intelligence and the king is the soul who is being directed by this material intelligence. So this is a case with all the jivas, everybody, all of us are guided by intelligence, material intelligence. And then Prabhupada goes on in the purport where he also gives a solution for this. He says that the only way one can purify one's intelligence is by surrendering to the Lord, by engaging one's senses in the service of the Lord. So then he goes on in detail explaining how King Ambarish could purify his intelligence by engaging all his senses in worshipping the Lord. Now this is a very, very important verse. So here also it is about how to purify one's intelligence. And it is such a basic question in the spiritual life. Because our soul in this material world, we have two coverings. One is the covering of the subtle body and one is the covering of the material body, the gross body. The gross body is made up of earth, fire, water, air and ether. So we have, our soul has a covering of a gross body and covering of a subtle body. Now there's not so much issue with the gross body because you will give up the gross body in this lifetime. But there is an issue with the subtle body because this body you will be carrying everywhere you go. So even when you change bodies, the subtle body is the same. You don't get a new body every time. When we leave this body, we get a new gross body, but we won't get a new subtle body. That is why you see in all the scriptures, they are giving so much importance to purifying the mind, ego and intelligence, because that is there with you for a long time to stay. It's going to be there with you. Unless and until final stage when you go back to Krishna, then it gets dissolved. But otherwise, it's always there. So, we need to work on mind, ego and intelligence. Because they are the one who is controlling where we will go, which body we will get in the future. Everything is controlled by this mind, ego and intelligence. But the problem is this intelligence which we are having as of now is contaminated. So it needs to be purified. See, the scriptures explain that our position is like that of a person who is in a chariot And this chariot is being drawn by the five horses, which are like the five senses. And the mind is the rope with which the chariot driver controls the senses. And the chariot driver is the intelligence. And the passenger who is sitting in the passenger seat is the soul. So if the intelligence is controlling the senses through the mind in a regulated fashion, then the chariot passenger has a very beautiful and smooth ride. But if the ropes with which the senses are to be controlled, rather the horses are to be controlled, if it takes over the chariot driver, imagine you are driving a car. The steering of the car or the accelerator or the brake are not under your control. And you are simply sitting there and the car is going wherever it wants to go, then it is dangerous. Now that is what is happening with us. We are in this chariot. And sometimes the reins with which the horse is supposed to be controlled take over the chariot driver. They are no more in the control of the chariot driver. They are more smarter and faster than the chariot driver. Then the whole journey becomes very difficult. It is a very rough journey. Today in this world, everybody is suffering only because of this particular situation in their life. The mind is not under control. The mind is dragging and taking us here and there where we don't want to go. But the thing is, those who do not have the scriptural knowledge consider the mind to be oneself, one's own self, and does not understand or rather cannot discriminate between the mind and the self. So when we read the scriptures, we understand that the self is distinct from the mind, ego and intelligence. So here, if the intelligence, that means the chariot driver, is not able to control the mind, the reins, then the horses are going to go in all directions. So what should one do? So Prabhupada gave it very simply. He said, if one wants to purify one's intelligence, just surrender to Krishna. That means hear Krishna Katha, read scriptures. If one wants to purify one's mind, then one should chant Hare Krishna. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Mantra itself means mantra, one which will trayate, which will liberate your mind. So one wants to purify the mind, you chant. One wants to purify the intelligence, you read scriptures. One wants to purify one's ego, then you just do devotional service, serve the Vaishnavas in a humble mood, and then your ego gets purified. So that is a short solution, that is Krishna consciousness. So once one starts engaging, like Prabhupada gave the example of Ambarish Maharaj, that Ambarish Maharaj was engaging all his senses in serving the Lord. And that is the only solution, there is no other solution. The couple of years ago, I had read a very beautiful article by His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. And therein he mentioned this about mind, where he gave a very beautiful acronym for mind. He said M-I-N-D. So he said M is the mind magnifies the problems. Why are we facing problem with the mind? See, this mind is very powerful. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, text 22, Krishna says, among the senses, I am the mind. And whatever we are trying to overcome in this world or trying to subdue, it is difficult because they are Krishna's own energies. And how can we fight with Krishna's own energy? Krishna himself says, Mama Maya Durataya, because it's Krishna's own energy, so it's so difficult to fight the Maya. It's so difficult to control the mind. What to speak about us, even devotees like Arjun in Bhagavad Gita text 34, chapter 6, Krishna Arjun says, Chanchala hi mano Krishna. Oh Krishna, maybe at some point somebody can control wind, but it is not possible to control the restless mind. So controlling the mind is very difficult. So here, what kind of trouble the mind gives us? And in his article, he had mentioned, said M for magnifying the problem. The mind magnifies the problem. See, there may be so many events happening in our life, but mind gives a translation and purport to every event. It makes even small inconveniences in our life into big catastrophes. For example, like let's say somebody is cooking. So when you are cooking, let's say something fall from your hand. Now the rectification would be is you just pick it up, clean up, and then you start cooking again. But what the mind does is it magnifies the problem. How could you throw that? You've always been careless. You've done that previously also. You can never be a good cook. You'll always be like that. So what the mind does is it adds the baggage of the past and the future to our present. And that makes it very difficult to deal with. If mind was not adding the baggage of the past or the future, we could have fought it out. It is something like a soldier. If you just have to fight with one soldier, it's not that difficult. But if there are three soldiers at a time trying to fight with you, then it is difficult. So if you just have to deal with the mind, it's all right. But what the mind does is it just carries from the past and then from the future, and then it troubles you, right? It's not bad for somebody to have a planning for future or take lessons from the past. But what the mind does is it will over-exaggerate the situation. It will over-translate the event into different meanings and put you into a lot of anxiety. And it will not allow you to work. It will not allow you to function. So if every little thing, if the mind keeps magnifying and if it doesn't allow you to stay in the present, then how are you going to work? So even before the mind translates the event into bigger ones or magnifies them, the intelligence has to work a little more faster than the mind and control it. So just like sometimes, you know, the children, they are very fast. You know, small children, if they're naughty, they'll just run and try to break some vase or some glass vase. But the mother is more smarter. She will run faster than the child and somehow protect the vase. Similarly, the mind may be very smart and it may just try to put us into anxiety. But the intelligence need to work faster than the mind, and then even before the mind engages into such dialogues with the self and disheartens, the intelligence needs to start working faster and direct the mind into a different direction. So magnifying the problem, the mind magnifies the problem. The mind, M-I-N-D, right? So with I, it imagines pleasure. So the thing with the mind is, mind is a storehouse, because unlike the gross body, the subtle body we've been carrying with us for many, many lifetimes. That means it is a storehouse of many, many emotions, many, many previous past experiences. So now what happens? Every time when you face an event, the mind will bring up the past experience associated with it. And then it will put you into all sorts of imaginations, which may or may not even happen, right? For example, you know, there was this one husband and wife who were fighting a lot. Otherwise, they were a very beautiful couple, very loving couple. But they were fighting a lot. And suddenly, one evening, so the neighbors were like, such a sweet couple, they never fight, what happened to them? So they thought better to intervene. So they put a bell and they asked, you know, why are you both fighting, you know? So then they said, no, there is an argument about, you know, our son, whether he will become a doctor or an engineer. My wife wants him to become a doctor and I want him to become an engineer. Now this old man was a wise old neighbor, and he said, instead of you both fighting, why can't you just ask your son what he wants to become? And then immediately both husband and wife said, we can't. And the neighbor said, why can't you ask? And he said, because he's not even born yet. He's inside the stomach. Now, this is all kind of imagination. The child has not even come out. We're not sure what's going to happen with the child, but we have all kinds of imagination. And this is what the mind does with us. It will put us into all sorts of imaginations, right? So this is a job of the mind. It will magnify the events that happen in our life with its past and present future baggage. And it will imagine various kinds of pleasures or displeasures based on our previous experiences. Now, nothing wrong in taking any lesson from the past, but we cannot get stuck into it, right? For example, when you're driving a car, you look into the rear mirror because you want to avoid accidents. You just want to see what's happening in the back. But you can't drive the whole car looking at the rear mirror. You'll have to just look straight to drive the car. But yes, in between, you can keep looking in the rear mirror to make sure there is nobody bumps into you. So similarly, one can look into the past and take the appropriate lessons required, but one can't live the life if they keep staying in the past. They need to stay in the present. So this is what mind does, magnifying the problems, putting us into imaginary pleasures based on previous experiences. And N is for neglecting opportunities. What does it mean by neglecting opportunities? Let's say you were not successful in performing a particular seva or service. But what the mind does is it disheartens you. It disheartens you into such an extent that even if there is an opportunity now to do the seva in a proper way, it will not give you the enthusiasm or motivation to do that. It will keep reminding you of your previous failures. Let's say one has been tempted or one has fallen to a temptation. He couldn't give up and he fall down to a temptation. So what the mind does is it will keep on reminding the person of that failure and will not allow the person to move forward. See, now the problem is, it's not that nobody falls down. In everybody's life, there will be situation where they may fall down. But the whole point in Krishna consciousness is that you may fall down, but you don't fall away. So the difference between falling down and falling away is you fall down, but then you again get up and you start continuing your Krishna consciousness. But falling away is because you fall down once, so now you want to give up the whole process. I can't do it anymore. Maybe I'm not capable. Maybe I can't do it. And you just go away from the process. And that is dangerous. That is dangerous. Because in everybody's life, sometimes situations may come wherein they just give up. They just give up. The anartha which is disturbing you or the particular situation, you may be overwhelmed by lust or by anger, in that fit of the moment, greed or whatever may just overpower you, and you just vomit it out. You are in anger. But the whole point is, let's say you get angry once in a week, or let's say once in 10 days, or let's say once in 15 days. There are situations in your life where you just can't control and you just burst out. Now the thing is, if you just put it on a graph paper, in your life, your whole week or month, you'll see there are certain times in the day when you are on very high, you just could not control the temptations. But then there are days where you are very sattvic and things are going very beautifully. Now what you need to do is, between these two highs that happen in your life in a span of a month or a span, what are you doing between these two high is very important. Let's say you just fall, you just got very angry on somebody and you just couldn't control yourself. That's all right. But then what do you do immediately after that is very important. At least after that, if you just start getting back to your devotional life, your chanting, your seva and whatever it is. Now, if you keep doing that between the two highs, if you just maintain your spiritual life without giving up on it, then what will happen over the period of time, the reoccurrence of these high, the frequency of reoccurrence of these high will keep decreasing and will keep decreasing. But let's say you don't do your homework in between these highs that you face, then slowly, it's not about only falling down, you will fall away from the process of Krishna consciousness. So we have to be careful. So mind will definitely demotivate you. Something like, you know, in a boxer's ring, sometimes if you're just fighting with somebody, you are in a boxing match. Now let's say the opposing person has defeated you and he has knocked you down. And now you're down there, you know, you're lying there and the referee is whistling, yeah, one, two, three, are you going to get up or not? Now imagine at that moment, if you ask the opposing party, do you think I'm going to win this match? He'll say, definitely you're not going to win. I'm going to win. You're finished. I've knocked you off. At that time, if you look for some inspiration or motivation from that opposing party, he's not going to give you that. What you need to do at that time is, you know, you have to look at your mentor at that time in the crowd. And then, you know, with his reassuring eyes, he will motivate you. You know, that's all that you can do it. And then you can get up and fight. So the problem is, we get knocked off by the mind. And then we again take shelter of the same mind which has knocked us off. So at that time, one needs to take shelter of Krishna. One needs to take the shelter of holy name. So sometimes imagine you are on, you know, big high. You just did something, you know, you just couldn't. You're overpowered by a particular anartha. Now, if you just stay there, what's the point? So the whole point is, all right, you did get tempted or you did commit, you know, whatever wrong or whatever. At least now go and take shelter of the holy name so that it will motivate you to again get up and fight. You can't give it up. So this is what the mind does. Neglects the opportunity to get up. It will not allow us. It demotivates us. Especially when you need it all the more. See, sometimes the mind is so badmash, you know, it is so wicked. You know, in a sweet shop in India, you know, there was many workers, and this sweet shop was a very famous shop, and this owner was very strict. So whenever the workers go to the bathroom or they go and chat on the phone, he's very strict. Don't waste time. Concentrate on the shop. Where did you go? Why are you wasting? You know, I'm paying you. Be careful. So he was so nagging and he was so very strict. So the workers, you know, they were like, you know, we don't want to work for him. You know, he doesn't even increase our salary. So they were all upset. But they were so wicked. They never said anything. They waited very patiently. And then when the Diwali time came, in India, Diwali time, the sweet shops have very big business. So when the Diwali time approached, you know, and there are lots of customers and lots of orders for the sweet meats, at that time, all the workers got united and said, we are on a strike. We're not going to work anymore. And then the owner is like, no, I'm ready to give you anything you want, but don't say that. I'll increase your salary. I'll give you bonus. I'll do this. I'll do that. And somehow made sure that they work. Now, mind is also like that. It's very badmash, very wicked. Otherwise, it's all right. It doesn't disturb us so much. But the moment you try to do something Krishna conscious, or the moment you will, you know, sit and chant your japa, the moment you will, you know, it just feels like you're just going good in your Krishna consciousness. Oh, it will start all the strike. It will give you all the reasons for why you shouldn't continue. What should, you know, that is the time, because it knows that you just now going to get so very much connected, or so very connected to Krishna. So now it will use all its weapons. It will take out all its weapon and it will dishearten you. It will bring out all the past and it will bring out all the future planning and the future anxieties. It will bring out all the thoughts and it will deviate you. That is the job of the mind. You know, it will just make. It will over-exaggerate things, you know. How can this Prabhu talk to you like that? How can he insult you? Just look at the way he spoke. Just look at the way. And it will just try its best to take us away from chanting or take us away from seva. So this is a job of the mind, you know, magnifying the problems, desires, you know, imagining the desires and neglecting the opportunities. And the last point is denying the truth. The mind will not allow us to accept that Krishna is our only shelter. the mind will not allow us to fully surrender to Krishna. It will deny the reality that Krishna loves us. It will give you all kinds of arguments. You know, even if you are reading scriptures where Krishna says, Name Bhakta Pranashyati, so the mind will start arguing, oh, that's all right, that's for devotees, but you're not a devotee, so how will Krishna protect you? You are alone, you are struggling, you know, who will help you? All kinds of thoughts the mind brings, you know, to the self and bewilders the self, right? So at that time, we need to take shelter of mentors, Vaishnavas, of Krishna, of chanting, of scriptures, read more, and take shelter of Krishna. Only Krishna can help, because mind is so powerful. When you read the scriptures and you read the past tense of different devotees, how they also struggled in life, how they also passed through many different situations, then it may motivate you, right? So these are the problems the mind does. Now, what are the solutions? Because in Srimad Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text number 6, Krishna says that mind can be your best friend or it can be your greatest enemy. So better to make it friend. And when it becomes your friend, it will be your best friend. You know, something like, you see, sometimes the horse, they are wild. You can't even train them. But once you train them, sometimes they are so loyal. You know, we know from this history, the story of this one horse, Chetak, how he saves his master from the battlefield. Because, you know, in the battlefield, his master, Maharana Pratap, he is wounded. But this horse is so loyal, he takes his wounded master, who is unconscious, to a safe place, you know, risking its own life. So same thing is with the mind. When it's uncontrolled, it doesn't allow, you know, when the horses are untamed, they will not allow anybody to sit on their back also. So when the mind is uncontrolled, it will play havoc in your life. But once the mind becomes your friend, then sometimes the mind will even protect you from a provocating situation and atmosphere, and will guide you and will counsel you. Prabhu, you're not doing right. This is not correct for you. Prabhu, don't indulge in this kind of a situation. You have taken this kind of pleasures for many, many lifetimes now, in many, many bodies. Now don't get diverted into the, oh, it'll give you so good counseling. But for the mind to give us a good counseling, it needs to be purified. It needs to be purified. The intelligence need to be purified. Only then they will guide us in the right direction. So how do we purify our mind? How do we purify our intelligence? Prabhupada gave a very beautiful example. He said, just ignore the mind. Ignore the mind. Now, what does it mean by ignoring the mind? Or you can say, starve the mind. You know, like just like, you know, in the olden days in India, we had the circus. Now we don't have circus because of some animal protection act or something like that. So in the circus, they even train the lions. So sometimes it's difficult to train a lion because they eat humans, right? They eat meat. But what the ringmaster does is the ringmaster starves the lion. And when they starve the lion for a few days, the lion becomes very weak. And at the end of it, when the ringmaster comes with a little meat, the lion is ready to do anything. And then the ringmaster asks the lion to jump from this chair to that chair, to jump inside the ring, jump from the ring of fire. And at every act that the lion does, the ringmaster gives a little piece of meat. Now, such a ferocious animal like a lion could be controlled because it was hungry, it was starved. So it was easy to manage. And similarly, our mind, to control it, it needs to be starved. That's very important. Because if you keep feeding it, and if you keep going according to the direction that it is giving, oh, in no time, it will take over you. But if you starve it, that means you are very selective in what you are giving it. then it will be subdued by you, it will be controlled by you. That means you don't get carried away, you know, just like you know, when you play cricket, what happens in the cricket, sometimes the players, they are appealing to the umpire, he's out. Now the umpire is very intelligent. Just because some player is being appealing very loudly, he doesn't get carried over. Aray, he's telling so loudly, he's shouting on the top of his voice, yeah, maybe he's out, okay, I give out. He doesn't do that. He doesn't go by how many players are appealing, how loudly are they appealing, how frequently are they appealing, nothing doing. He's looking at the game and he's going to give decision based on his own intelligence, whether it is out or not out or four or six. And similarly, even we need to do that. You know, be an umpire. Just because your mind starts appealing, you know, I want this. And it starts appealing loudly. That doesn't mean that you just give up. You know, all right, I just give in. You don't do that. You're very careful in what you are feeding your mind. So even if it's appealing very loudly, you be careful. You look with the Shastra Chakshu. You know, just like sometimes, you know, the empire is not very sure whether it is out or not out. So the empire just looks to third empire, you know, the third empire, and they decide whether it's out or not out. They take help. Similarly, even sometimes in our lives, by our own self, maybe we can't judge whether this is good for me, this is not good for me. We can just take a help of third empire in our life, who can see things being a little detached from our situation. So that third empire can be Krishna, that third empire can be our guru, that third empire can be our Siksha gurus, our spiritual mentors, other senior Vaishnavas. They can help us to interpret every event in our life in a proper way, the way it has to be interpreted, because they are the third empire. So they have the aerial view of things, or they have the bird's view of things. Because when we see things, we see it from our level, because we are attached to that particular event and situation, and we may not be able to see it very neutrally. You know, in fact, when people come to us for advice, we give amazing advices. But when the same situation we face in our own life, it's very difficult. Because our own life, we can't see things, we can't see a bigger picture. Because we ourselves are inside that problem, and we are not able to detach ourselves because we are not peaceful, and we can't very, because we have not got the distinction yet that my mind is different and I am, the self is different. If that distinction is very clear, then you can do a lot of things. But because that distinction is not there, sometimes we're just not able to bring out a proper solution, or we don't know the vision with which the event has to be interpreted. Right? So at that time we can take help of others. Only a peaceful mind can guide us in a proper direction. Peaceful mind. See, sometimes, you know, in the Navy, when they train the people, this Navy people, when they get the training, you know, one of the exercises during the training is they tie their hands and legs and they put them in the water, you know, 9 feet depth water. And then they are supposed to come out. So what happens is, as soon as they're put into the water, they start frantically trying to remove those ropes. And but they will be unsuccessful and they will get drowned. Of course, drowned in the sense, it's an exercise, a part of an exercise for training. But then those who have a very peaceful mind, they won't do anything. They'll simply be there. And once they're put in the water, they will go down up to the end bottom. Because it's not very deep, just 9 feet. And the moment they go to the bottom, then they will push themselves by stamping that leg on the bottom and come up in the water body. And then they will start floating. And once they start floating, then very slowly they will untie themselves, because the ropes which are tied to them are actually not very tightly tied. It's just an exercise to see that in provocating situations, how well are they able to use their mind and intelligence. So if somebody is peaceful, then he can bring out solution. And the problem is that our mind is not peaceful because we are not training it to focus. That is why this chanting helps a lot. If somebody is chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, then that makes the mind very peaceful. So there are so many tips on how to control mind or make mind our friend. I remember this beautiful bhajan by Govinda Das. He says, Bhajahure mana Shri Nanda Nandana Abhaya Charanara Vrindare. Bhajahure mana. The only and the only way to control the mind is Bhajahure mana Shri Nanda Nandana. We need to engage the mind in serving Krishna, in remembering Krishna. That's the only way. Controlling mind, you see, even Rupa Goswami in his very primary book that he's suggested for the devotees, Upadeshamrita, he talks about Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jivva Vegam. Here also he says Manasa Vegam, control the mind. And you see, the Vaishnava Acharyas in their different bhajans are always talking about mind. And then they say, oh my dear mind, please worship Krishna. See, sometimes, you know, children, you know, when they are playing around, they're very naughty. They'll make all the things dirty. Oh, they'll throw this, they'll do that. They'll, you know what the mother does? The mother will, first of all, be very strict with the child and not allow the child to, you know, make things dirty. Don't do this. Sit down. Sit quietly. Don't move. You know, she'll be very strict. But after being strict, what is the second step she will do? Because she knows the child is full of energy. The child is not going to sit like this just because she has ordered it. Now she will make sure that the child is engaged in certain activities which will keep the child busy, and so that the child will not do any more naughtiness or, you know, or destroy things around in the house. Similarly, our mind is also very naughty. So first we be strict with the mind. That means we do this sama, dama, tapa, right? Dama is self-control. You know, you keep your mind away from the stimulus. You don't put your mind in a provocating situations. You keep it in a protective atmosphere. So you do dama, self-control. You do tapa, you do austerities, you know, chanting, fasting, all kinds of things. So by sama, dama, tapa, you just control your mind. Be very strict with your mind. Just like I gave the example of starving the lion. But then what do you do? Then Govinda Das says, Shravana Ketana Smarana Vandana Pada Sevana Dasyare Pujana Sakhi Jana Atmani Vedana Govinda Dasa Abhilashare. That's about it. First you control the mind, be strict with it, and then give some work to mind. Engage it, keep it busy. So Govinda Das says, how do I keep my mind busy? Shravana Kirtana Smarana Vandana. Keep the mind so busy in chanting, so busy in preaching, so busy in seva, so busy in puja, so busy with Krishna-centered activities. Give it engagement. It shouldn't be free, right? And if you keep doing that, ultimately the mind will get purified. Ultimately the mind will get purified. There is no other way to control mind but to engage the mind in Krishna's service. Only that can help us. Our mind is like a potential threat in our lives. But when we add Krishna to our lives, then we are safe. We are safe. It's like if you are going in a dark street in the night and you see a shadow of a thief, you are really afraid now, what will happen? But just a little further you see a cop, a policeman. Then you feel reassured, nothing to worry, there is a policeman who will protect me. Similarly, this mind is the potential threats in our life. It will deviate us, it may take us away from Krishna, it may just... It's a monkey. It'll jump from this branch to that branch and make all kinds of hangama. But if we have added Krishna to our life, then he's like that cop, you know. We are assured of protection. Krishna will protect us. Have a dialogue with mind. Sometimes the mind will, take you here and there and talk, you know, talk. Like what do you say that? TED talk or what do you say? Pep talk, right? And this will happen, that will happen. It will show you a gloomy future or some kind of experiences from the past. And it may give you a pep talk and it may just take you to another direction. But have a conversation with the mind. Talk to the mind, you know. And convince the mind based on your success. In the sense, see, sometimes what happens, we get too busy in seeing where our goal is, right? Like, let's say our goal is to go to Goloka Vrindavan. And we are here. And we get disheartened because I'm here and the goal is so far. And I don't know, you know, will I be able to achieve it or not? But sometimes instead of looking in front, you can always look, oh, how much I've already passed or how much I've already crossed. And then you give a talk to the mind. Look, you know, I didn't even know that, you know, there is something called Hare Krishna mantra I have to chant. But look, now I chant. Oh, look, now I've given up on so many food which I used to eat initially. Look, initially I was not even, you know, able to concentrate my mind on Krishna even for 10 minutes. But look, now I sit all through my 2 hours of chanting. So like that, you know, you can keep encouraging your mind by showing it the little success that we have in our Krishna conscious journey. The other thing that we can do to control our mind is take association of devotees. Take association of devotees. That is very important. Only devotees association can help us fight this ordeal of mind. This mind is always seeking our attention. So the only way that we can pass through this trouble that the mind is giving us is by associating with devotees. So I was just contemplating the other day how, you know, Indra, he sent this rain to the Vrajavasis. He sent this rain to the Vrajavasis. It was all because of his arrogance and also because of his lack of association with devotees. Because he was the boss out there and he had nobody on top of him. And maybe he had no association where somebody could tell him that, Prabhu, you're doing wrong. You know, why are you sending this Samantaka clouds to the Vrajavasis, right? So he didn't have such association and that sent him to the wrong direction. So, and his mind took over, he couldn't subdue his mind, and mind misguided him. So in our lives, association of devotees is very important. If we take the association of devotees, then that will help us subdue our mind. I was hearing this beautiful lecture sometime back of Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj, and he made a very beautiful point. He said, the mind works in decades. That means, you may sometimes feel that I'm fine. Everything is okay with my mind. I'm okay in Krishna consciousness. But sometimes, you know, even in our movement, we see sometimes somebody has been devotee for 10 years, 20 years. And suddenly you see one fine day disappeared. Then we are like, what happened? But the problem is, mind sometimes works in decades. Sometimes it's not giving you trouble for a long time. And then one fine day, it will suddenly start asking questions to you. What are you doing here? Why are you in this moment? Why are you chanting? What is this? All sorts of doubts, you know. So it's very, very wicked when it will start asking you tough questions and when it will just, pack your bags and take you away and kidnap you and go. You never know. But when you are in association of devotees, then you are sure, because devotees will help you. They will protect you, right? I was reading one letter that Srila Prabhupada had written to one of the devotees, where Srila Prabhupada said that if you think you can be in Krishna consciousness alone, then if you are insane. It's not possible. Everybody needs the association of devotees. Ekaki amar nahi paaye bal hari naam sankirtan. Even Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that alone it's difficult. So, association of devotees. It gives you a very big protection. I remember sometimes, you know, in my house, I have two sons. Now they don't fight. They're both are elder. But I remember when they were young, you know, there's lots of fighting happened. Now, whenever, you know, they both fight, my younger one is so smart, he would just go and hide behind my husband. You know, if my husband is in that room, he will just go to that particular room where my husband is. And then the elder one will not enter that room because he knows dad is there and dad will get angry. So he remains outside the room, but he tells him, he shows him with his finger that now you are saved because you have gone into dad's room. But once you come out, I'm going to, you know, fight it back. You know, sometimes they're boys, right? So they just wrestle or they just punch each other. They used to do that when they were young. Now, you know, this is something like what the mind does to us or what Maya does to us. The moment we are in protection of the devotees and we are with them, then the mind is not able to attack us. But the mind is waiting. When will this person disassociate with the devotees? Then I'll start giving all my punches. I'm ready. Just come out. Just disassociate. That is why we should be very, very careful that we don't give up the association of devotees. We see in the case of Saubaramuni. We see in the case of Bharat Maharaj. They were all independently doing a great job. And they had great intention. And they were doing great austerity. But then why did they fall down? The only reason we see is their disassociation with devotees. Because they were not in association of devotees. If Bharat Maharaj was in association of devotees, maybe some devotee would have told him, Prabhu, you're going wrong. Why are you getting so attached to this deer? Or if Saubaramuni had association with some devotees, maybe he would have told him that, Prabhu, why are you, you know, why do you want to get married? You know, you're going wrong. Or why do you want to offend a Vaishnava like Garuda? You're going in the wrong direction. So, this is what happens. If you're not in association of devotees, there are always chances. Now, somebody may say, but Bharat Maharaj, Saubaramuni, they had so much compassion. He had compassion for fishes and he had compassion for the deer. But your independent compassion or your independent passion are both dangerous if it is independent. Independent is the word. We cannot be independent in this Kali Yuga. We need the association of devotees, right? So this is one very big takeaway from today's class is if you want to control mind, we take association of devotees. And the other thing is reading scriptures because, see, you can learn from your experiences and you can also learn from scriptures. But learning from your experiences is something like driving a car with the rear light. You know, rear light is after you have, you know, bumped into the ditch and all, you can simply see it. But headlights are that they will show you where the ditch is so that you can be protected from that ditch. You don't have to bump into it or you don't have to take your car over it. You know, these scriptures are like headlights. They will show you ahead the road which you are going to take and what are the obstacles and where is the, you know, what is the problem with the road so you can prepare yourself. So, if you take shelter of the scriptures, it will beforehand warn you. Hey, look, you know, mind will tell you like this, but you don't have to follow your mind. You know, mind is taking you to this diet, but you don't have to do that. So, you think this way. You see, why does a person do something wrong? When the person is doing that, he doesn't know that he is doing wrong. He thinks he's doing right because he's being misguided by the mind, right? But the scriptures, you see, sometimes we see even in some devotees' lives, we have seen that they commit suicide. Now, why does this happen? Because maybe they are so much overpowered by the mind and the way the mind makes them feel towards their situation in life as if there, it's unmanageable. There is nothing you can do about it. This is the only solution. You know, that is a way it motivates them into a particular direction. So, but the problems which they are facing in their life, many of the devotees must have previously faced or maybe are presently facing. But everybody is not going for that option of ending life. That means they are taking help of the higher intelligence, spiritual intelligence, or intelligence purified by the scriptures, or the help of other devotees and managing the situation. But if you completely surrender to your mind, and if you are at the mercy of your mind, oh, it will make havoc in your life. So it's very important that we read scriptures, because when we read scriptures, then scriptures will give you the knowledge of, it will give you the vision with which you have to interpret the events and situations in your life. It will guide you in the proper direction. It will give you examples from the previous devotees, how they had troubles in their life, what happened, how they fought it out. So, take association of devotees, read scriptures, fast your mind, starve it so you can control it, engage it in Shravan Kirtan, do Shama Dama Tapa, make your mind your friend, and don't be disheartened, and don't gauge your progress on a day-to-day basis. It's not possible. Just like a mother, if she just takes a measuring tape and then starts measuring whether the child has grown a little tall or not. If she keeps measuring every day, it's not going to work out, because the child doesn't grow. The child does grow every day, but you can't measure it on a tape every day. But then after 6 months, you can definitely say there is a change in the height of the child, the weight of the child, right? So similarly, in the Krishna consciousness also, it's not that every single day you can understand how much progress you are making. But then after 6 months, 8 months, 1 year, you just look back and you understand definitely there has been a change, there has been a growth. So you really don't have to worry so much, and don't become disheartened. You know, the mind is trying to do that to you, but don't become disheartened. So these are some of the takeaways from today's class. You know, you may fall down, but don't fall away. And take shelter of Krishna, and don't take shelter of the mind, because mind is the one which is giving trouble. So if you just go back to the mind and take shelter, what's the use? So, and if you want to understand the difference between yourself and mind, if you want to see the distinction, then you need to chant regularly, constantly, steadily. And one fine day, it happens. One need to have patience. Just like Prabhupada used to say that a newly married woman can't have immediately child. She has to wait for 9 months. So similarly, we can't... you know, just after coming into Krishna consciousness for a few years, we can't start asking questions. Oh, why am I not able to understand which is my mind and which is myself? And when is myself asking me to do something? Or when is my mind asking me to do something? How will I know the difference between the mind is asking me to do it or self is? It's not so easy. You have to wait patiently. But meanwhile, we can simply keep doing what Prabhupada asked us to do. That is, chant Hare Krishna, read scriptures, take association of devotees, take Krishna Prasad, and that's about it. And one fine day we will see that yes, the mind got purified, the intelligence got purified, by serving the devotees the ego got purified, the senses got purified, and we are now able to understand, and mind has become our friend, and we are able to engage it successfully in the service of Krishna. So I think I went over time. I will end it here for today. So just like the queen, the king, Puranjana, was guided by the queen and was following her everywhere, the same thing the soul does, but we need to bring a stop to that by purifying our material intelligence. So I'll end it here. If anybody has any questions, I'll just take one or two questions, because I have a problem with my throat, and I'm not very comfortable in speaking today. So one or two questions and I'll end it here. Any corrections, suggestions? And thank you so much for giving me all of your association. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So your question was on Sama, Dama, Tapa. So Tapa was austerity, and Dama is self-control. And what is Sama? Sama is being peaceful. So I was giving that example of the Navy training, that how with a peaceful mind one can have a rational thinking. If the mind is not peaceful, then we can't do things properly. So to have a peaceful mind or peaceful demeanor or something to be being in a state of awareness, sometimes we do things so mechanically, we're just running around and we are not being in that particular stage, we are not there. So peacefulness is just looking at things peacefully. So dama is self-control, shama is to be peaceful, tapa is to be austere or starve our mind. So peacefulness is basically to be there whenever, see, like for example, let me give one example, how do I explain? Let's say you are doing a particular service. Sometimes even when we are doing that service, we are in so much hurry to just complete the service and go to the next service. And what is the next? And what is the next? We are so much in hurry. We are not being there. Just be there at that moment. And we are not able to understand that the whole process of doing the service itself is the result of the service. There is no other result that which we need to wait for. So we are not peaceful. We are not at peace. We are not there at that moment. And that creates a lot of disturbances when we are always looking for what next, So sama is to have a peaceful mind. Be there. Whatever service you are doing, just be there and enjoy that service, whatever you are doing. I think I could have given a better explanation, but some other time I'll take it. This is what is coming right now in my mind, from the top of my mind, yeah.
This thing is very, I'm not able to take in this kind of activities because of he's a very good soul and sorry, all the time service oriented only. Can you help me in this situation? How can we come out from this?
All right. So what I understand is that your question is that you were attached to a devotee and he's no more. You can't have his physical association, and that is worrying you, and you're not able to chant your rounds properly. Well, I think it's very natural, and somebody brings you in Krishna consciousness. You are attached to the person, and now the person's physical association is no more available. So I understand, and definitely there will be some kind of a disturbance in your mind and lamentation. And immediately, I don't think there is a quick fix solution or some magic that you will forget him and you will start chanting your rounds, very nicely as before. Yeah, you will definitely have certain disturbances for some time. But on a positive note, what you can do is you can start chanting some extra rounds for him. Since he brought you into Krishna consciousness, you can chant more for him, you can pray for him. Because you see, you and me, we are all very small. Krishna has a bigger plan for everything. And Krishna can see bigger picture, which we can't. So, we can just, with our limited vision and intelligence, we can understand things very limitedly. But Krishna has a bigger plan for everything. So whatever happened, it's not under our control. But the only thing we can do from our side is we can chant for him, we can pray for him. And during this time, you can read more, and maybe do some more little austerity, some kind of a fasting, some kind of a chanting. And that way you can show your gratitude to him, because you can simply react, but you cannot do anything about the situation. There is nothing that you can do will help. So you just pray to Krishna for him, and this is what you can do. You see, that is what today's topic was all about, right? That events happen in our life, but how do we interpret them? How do we translate them is very important. See, Parikshit Maharaj, an event happened in his life where he was cursed that he will die in 7 days. But the way he interpreted it was different. He took it as an opportunity to hear Krishna Katha. So sometimes it even may happen in somebody's life where he has been told by the doctors, look, you're going to die, with cancer or something. Now it depends upon him how he interprets that event in his life. So in everybody's life, there will be something or the other happening. But the way we interpret it and give meaning to it is what the art of being successful in Krishna consciousness is all about. So now the event has already happened and it's not in our hand. So now what we can do is take this event as an opportunity to chant more. Maybe, you can express your gratitude by him by taking some kind of a vows. Okay, from henceforth, I chant two more rounds for him or for a certain period of time, or I will read more scriptures, or I'll pray for him, or like that. But this is all we can do. And being upset, definitely, we are humans. Even Arjun, after hearing the whole Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, he cried when Abhimanyu died, right? So somebody may ask him, how come Abhimanyu cried? Even after we understand Gita, I remember this one question somebody in Mauritius, some press reporter, they asked Prabhupada. They said that how come, Arjun heard the whole Gita, but still when Abhimanyu died, he had tears. And Prabhupada said that it's not about whether he had tears or not. The question is that what he did after that. Even though Abhimanyu died, the next day Arjun didn't say that I won't fight anymore. He went ahead and he fought the war. So it's not about, it's about what you do next, right? So it's like we understand. We are reading scriptures. We are hearing Bhagavatam every day. We understand it's not in our hands. And, so the only thing we can do is that take this as an opportunity to hear more, chant more. And, this is all we can do, and pray for him. That's all we can do. But at the same time, no harm in shedding few tears and feeling bad about it. It's human. It's human to cry. It's human to feel emotion for somebody. So don't start thinking, why am I facing like this? How should I come out of this? You don't need to come out. You can give some time and lament, Even when we lament for a devotee, that is also purifying, Because they are devotee, right? Not a materialistic person. He was also serving Krishna. So definitely his remembrance is also beneficial for you only. So, but do it in a positive way. Don't remember him and get discouraged in Krishna consciousness. Remember him and get encouraged and chant more, for him and for you both. Okay? I hope this helps you.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Krishna.